You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 24th, 2023. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we know the indictment ain't real until the perp walks into court with a mob lawyer named Taco Penis. It's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Hey, everybody. Spring is here, technically. And you know, it's actually getting very close to spring. We can tell here because there are rabbits in the front yard.
Yes, yes.
When the rabbits come back, it's spring.
The window game has changed, Blue Cat.
Oh, my gosh. The cats are just in heaven because the bunnies are out there hopping around.
But it's not quite spring yet. It feels, I mean, there's little daffodils peeking their eyes out at you. Mm-hmm. And some buds on some trees, but it's gray and it's misty and it's, you know.
Yeah, and chilly. Still a little chilly.
It's that in-between time.
And it might be fake spring. You know, Midwest has fake spring and we could get snow next week. We, you know, you always have to kind of brace yourself in the Midwest. But
and you know what that reminds me of, Blue Gal?
What?
It reminds me of these last 2 weeks in the news. In-between time. It's not quite spring, and the spring's coming. We're pretty sure
it's not quite indictment. It's not quite not indictment. Well, it is a cheap laugh. We realize we got a cheap laugh in the opening of the show. To make fun of someone's name is, you know, beneath us in some ways, but then again, not.
No, it's beneath you, but not me. I never made any pretense about being anything other than low and perverse and exactly who I am. We were talking just before we went on the air. What this period reminds me of, oddly enough, is a movie from 1940. I think it's 1940. It's His Girl Friday.
Yeah.
And all the reporters sitting around in the press room waiting for Earl Williams to be hung. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing to report on. So they just make stuff up. They play poker. They lie. They borrow money. They rag on each other. But there's nothing but speculation and human interest stories and what if and why not. Because there's no story. They're all waiting for the story. And the story turns out not to be the story they thought it would be. But it's this sort of dreary, when are we going to hang the guy already? And once has the story
already
written.
The innocent guy. No one cares about that. The justice isn't part of it. Yeah.
But it's one paper has, you know, and then a thing happens and there's an escape. And one paper has the heroic efforts of the mayor. That's the Republican paper. And then the incompetence of the mayor. And that's the Democratic paper. But it's all just reporters bored out of their minds, just vamping. And that is what you see on cable news every night, all night.
This week,
A lot of lawyers who are lovely people in most cases, talking about what if and what if and what if and speculating. Meanwhile,
and the other story, Drift Glass, is Republican politicians attempting to interfere with the dispensation of justice.
Yeah. Oh, it's, yeah. Yeah. Making fools of themselves trying. So,
But we want to talk for a minute about Joe Tacopino, or as he's known at our house, Joey Tacopinas.
Yeah.
He's had quite a week. He's Trump's lawyer in the Stormy Daniels case, but he was almost, or maybe was, or could have been Stormy Daniels' lawyer in the Trump case.
Yeah.
Back in 2018. And he pretended he definitely was Stormy Daniels' lawyer on CNN, which, by the way, is on television, and there are tapes. P.S. I want to do a P.S. on this.
Sure.
Serious practicing attorneys simply should not appear on cable news to comment on prominent salacious legal cases. That should be the rule. There will always be a conflict of interest down the line or, you know, in some instances, even jail time for yourself, like Michael Avenatti, right?
Yeah. This is not, you know, the television box is not Schrodinger's box.
Right.
You know, it's not like, well, maybe I am Stormy Daniels lawyer. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I was. Maybe I will be. It all depends on when you open it and what happens. No. There is one answer to that question. And you are burying yourself professionally, you know, Mr. Taco Penis, every time you open your mouth. But please, you know, I think you're right. You shouldn't go on television. You shouldn't make,
I'm
you know.
I'm sure he thought it was promoting his career as a mobbed up lawyer or whatever he was, but you'll notice the legal luminaries on MSNBC are always former prosecutors, former members of the Justice Department, former whatever. And they're either teaching or they have a podcast or they're writing books or whatever it is, because current prosecutors are busy prosecuting and defense lawyers should be busy defending. But speaking of lawyers, I want everyone to go and watch. I've tweeted it a couple times. The clip from the President Show from 5 years ago. I have had this running through my head all week long. There's a skit called Lawyering Up, where the soon-to-be impeached for the first time, Donald Trump, was interviewing candidates to be his lawyer. And he had Alan Dershowitz, Ron Kuby, and Gloria Allred on the show playing it straight, like they were being interviewed to be Donald Trump's lawyer in the impeachment trial, which had not happened yet, that he had not been impeached yet. And Ron Kuby asks the guy playing Trump, who's Tony Adamaniuk, if I become your lawyer, will you actually do the things I suggest you do? No.
No.
Okay. Will you stop doing the things I suggest you stop doing? No. And later on, Ron Kuby says, if you do the things that I suggest you do, I can keep you out of prison. But at this point, I'm not sure I want to. And I, you know, he is a nightmare client. He is a nightmare client. And everything he says, this is where I cautioned people about this last week, about staying calm through all of this.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be a lot of serpents coming up out of the water. New Testament style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything Donald Trump says on social media, on videos, in interviews, wherever, can and will be used against him in a court of law.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just remember that. He's impeaching himself over and over and over again.
Well, and if you are a practicing attorney,
mm-hmm.
and you're weighing the idea of going on to MSNBC or CNN to talk about a salacious case which you are involved in.
Right. And whether it's Donald Trump or Gwyneth Paltrow or anyone else, it doesn't matter.
And,
right?
and the thought flashes through your mind, well, Alan Dershowitz does it. Well, John Turley does it. You know,
yeah,
maybe
those are not your role models, people.
No, sit with that a moment and think about why they do it and where they do it.
Yeah.
Do you really want to be those guys? Because I don't think you want to be those guys. But, you know, there's always that spotlight that just beckons, and money and clients and fame and all that good, good, good stuff. And, you know, I can't tell you to stop doing it, but I'm telling you, there should be a class included in law school about stay the fuck away from the camera, you damn idiot.
Yeah, I have a lot of experience with lawyers. My first husband, and you do too. You were married to a lawyer. I was married to a lawyer. And I always want the kind of lawyer who would rather never be on camera.
Yes, absolutely.
In the courtroom, on television. Now, there are some lawyers like Ron Kuby's old partner, William mm-hmm. Kunstler, who use the cameras constantly
mm-hmm.
to influence public opinion about larger issues, mm-hmm. justice system, etc. He was good at that. That's a different story. But you want to talk about things that make conservatives uncomfortable, Driftglass.
I do. And I want to talk about, I wrote a post today. You're all welcome to go see it. I'm not going to say the title of it on this show because this is a family show. And I use I use a naughty word in the title. But this was a banner week for our other podcast, one of our two other podcasts, our No Fair Remembering Stuff ethos. Because this was a week when remembering stuff that makes conservatives extremely uncomfortable was all over the headlines. Now, there were two separate incidents where this bore down on this week. And one was one you could see coming down the calendar. You know, you could see it marching towards you week after week. It was the 20th anniversary of the unprovoked and illegal invasion of Iraq.
Episode on that dropped Tuesday is really good, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, it is. It's really good. And it's
about us. It's not a blow-by-blow invasion of Iraq. It's about our blogs and what we were writing and thinking about at the time. So
what we were seeing and what we were part of and what it was like to be a member of the peanut gallery, you know, who were being swept along by history, being made by very bad people.
Mm-hmm.
And the other event, and of course, there's a whole lot of people, a whole lot of Republicans a whole lot of conservatives who were having a hard time coming up with any answer about Iraq that doesn't sound ridiculous. And then quite unexpectedly, there was another one. This didn't come out of the calendar. This just came out of thin air. A man named Ben Barnes, who everyone knows about at this point, came clean finally about his part in the sabotage of Jimmy Carter's campaign in 1980 after 43 years. So this week we have two cases where the actions of responsible men and women, the people who were doing it, failed in real time. Stopping them failed in real time. So we were all left to wait and hope, Lou Gal, for the judgment of history. And you know what? After all this time, I've concluded that judgment of history is mostly bullshit.
Yep.
You know, the sabotage of the Carter campaign happened two generations ago. If you figure a generation is about 20-something years, it was almost two generations ago. And Reagan is dead. And John Connally, who was the Democrat who was involved in this, the Texas Democrat who's involved in this, is dead. And Jimmy Carter is in hospice and has been out of power for 43 years. The damage is done. Yeah. This is why after 20 years, we're still waiting for the architects and cheerleaders of the Iraq War to pay something, anything, for what they've done. And nobody has paid a dime. Nobody's suffered professionally or personally at all. So now that's all done and gone and in the past. And part of our job is to remember it and document it and keep it alive in the hearts and minds of people who are willing to remember such things. But
Can I just interrupt you for a minute and ask you a question? What do you say to the people on Twitter who angered me the most this week of Carter would have lost anyway?
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Honest to God. No, it's treason you're talking about.
It would have, yeah.
It has nothing to do with the results of the election and everything to do with keeping American hostages in confinement an extra 3 months.
Well, you know,
because you want political ends.
You know, Blue Gal, John F. Kennedy's second term would have sucked if he wasn't shot. So there. No, they're just lying assholes. Now, Carter was ahead in the polls, and Reagan was doing all he could to pull all the racists and all the right-wing evangelicals who were a rising force in the GOP together to defeat Carter. Maybe he would have won. Maybe he wouldn't have. But the fact that, like Nixon and LBJ, Nixon sabotaging LBJ's peace talks in Vietnam to deny him a second term and to win the 1968 election. Reagan and the Reagan people sabotaging Carter to make sure Reagan got elected. I don't want to hear about, but, you know, it's treason.
It's not just sabotaging Carter. That's my point.
Right. It wasn't just a campaign trick.
It's cooperating with hostage takers for politics.
And that dovetails right into Iran-Contra. You know, we're going to sell arms to terrorists, to the reasonable people. And we're going to launder the money through Israel and use it to fund an illegal war in South America. It's a hat trick. Mm-hmm. And it was all while Reagan's looking at the television, you know, going, we would never negotiate with terrorists. No, you negotiated with them. You gave them what they wanted. You used them as they used you. You formed a partnership with them to oust Carter, and then you sold them weapons and American taxpayer paid for weapons that you used the money to fund an illegal war. And all of that should have put all of them in jail for forever. Mm-hmm. And none of it did. And the lesson we should learn now, in this moment right now, is that appeals to the judgment of history about Trump and the GOP right now are bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know, when Mike Pence says, goes to an event where there's no mics and there's no cameras and talks about how Trump put his family in danger and history will judge him. Fuck you, Mike Pence. Fuck you. History is not going to judge anybody because, 20 years from now or 40 years from now on their deathbeds, Tucker Carlson or Laura Ingraham or Dick Cheney, because he's going to live forever. That asshole's going to live forever. Or Kevin McCarthy or Kellyanne Conway, any of them, Karl Rove, any of them may tell all, may spill the beans. Yeah, we knew it was crazy. And Trump used to have bum fights in the White House and we'd execute people in the courtyard and we laughed and laughed and laughed. But so what? The damage will have been done and the chain reaction from all that damage will have become part of the culture of whatever's left of this country after they've damn near destroyed it. And this is what people like them understand, that once they get over worrying about the judgment of history, and the only thing the judgment of history is, it's like a third cousin of a conscience. You know, The history, your conscience will bother you. You don't believe in God, but history will judge. That's why you shouldn't do it. Once these people get over that, become atheists about the judgment of history, they can get away with murder because they don't care, because they're going to get away with it. You're going to do it. They're going to change the world having done it. They're going to reap the rewards from it. And they're going to go to their grave untouched by the consequences. And they don't care because they've seen what happens when you get a mob of wingnut assholes behind you. You can do anything and there'll be no consequences at all. So, you know, what happened to the entire Republican Party after the collapse of the Bush administration? The entire GOP put on funny hats and called themselves Tea Party and got away with it. What happened after they went after Clinton and impeached Clinton over a blowjob? They got away with it. These people have been taught by history that they can get away with anything, and the media will let them get away with it, and they can terrorize the rest of the country into shutting up about it, and a few mouthy liberals complaining about it are irrelevant because they don't have television shows, they don't have radio shows, nobody listens to them, and once history catches up with them, they'll be dead. They don't care. It's just like the housing crisis. I'll be gone. You'll be gone. Nobody cares. And right. There'll be no consequences
to us personally. And we'll be richer. We'll have money. Exactly. And that's the point. We'll have money and power.
Yep. Yeah. Speaking of people at the other end of the spectrum, I know you want to talk about poverty.
I do. And this is a triggering issue for me. I've spent a lot of time this week in tears over Matthew Desmond's book, Poverty by America. It's on everybody's list. It's a new book. Matthew Desmond, I would say, is a saint for writing, as he does, about poverty and evictions and fighting the good and positive fight for a new normal on how we deal with poverty, not by looking at poor people, but by examining what the wealthy get. It turns out the richest American families, the top 20%, get 40% more in government subsidies than the poorest 20%. Mm-hmm. But we have to talk about how we, and that's an important word, how do we pay for it? When it's poor people. And, you know, so Matthew Desmond is to be honored for his work. That said, he's already got a MacArthur Fellowship and a Pulitzer Prize. So he's getting plenty of attention and he's spending his prize money very wisely and in an honorable way by promoting this idea that poverty will be abolished in America only when a mass movement demands it be abolished. So we're the new abolitionists, and the abolition is poverty, not slavery, although it's slavery. We all know that's what it is. So he's got a website called endpovertyusa.org, which is part of starting this mass movement. Poverty doesn't happen by accident. America manufactures poverty. And in an interview on audible.com, Desmond said, quote, "A third of us get by on less than $55,000 a year. You know, 38 million of us live below the poverty line," quote unquote, which is just a static, sterile way of saying 38 million of us can't afford basic necessities. And that's the population of Australia that should shame us. And then the thing that got me hooked into this whole book and talking about it and wanting to talk about it was Margaret Talbot's review of Poverty by America in the New Yorker this week. And everybody should go online and find this review and read it. And there's a political angle to this. Listen to this paragraph and see if you can find the commonality as far as politics is concerned. This is the paragraph from the Margaret Talbot review of Poverty by America in the New Yorker this week. "When President Clinton instituted welfare reform in 1996, pledging to transform a broken system that traps too many people in a cycle of dependence, an older model, aid to families with dependent children, or AFDC, was replaced by temporary assistance for needy families, or TAMF, where most funds administered by AFDC went straight to families in the form of cash aid. TAMF gave grants to states with the added directive to promote two-parent families and discourage out-of-wedlock childbirth, and let the states fund programs to achieve those goals as they saw fit. As a result," quote, "states have come up with rather creative ways to spend TAMF dollars," Desmond writes. "Nationwide, for every dollar budgeted for TAMF in 2020, poor families directly received just 22 cents. Only Kentucky and the District of Columbia spent over half their TAMF funds on basic cash assistance. Between 1999 and 2016, Oklahoma directed more than $70 million of TAMF money towards initiatives to promote marriage, offering couples counseling and workshops that were mostly open to people of all income levels. Arizona used some of the funds to pay for abstinence education. Pennsylvania gave some of its TAMF money to anti-abortion programs. Mississippi, and this is where everybody associated this with this, should be in jail, and many of them are in jail. Mississippi treated its TAMF funds as an unexpected Christmas present, hiring a Christian rock singer to perform at concerts, for instance, and a former professional wrestler, the author of an autobiography titled Every Man Has His Price, he was the million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase, to deliver inspirational speeches. Much of this was revealed by assiduous investigative reporters and by a 2020 audit of Mississippi's Department of Human Services. The DHS lady in the center of this scandal, by the way, and this is me talking, Nancy knew, she plea bargained to go to federal prison instead of the more draconian Mississippi state prison.
Jeez.
Now, I gotta ask you, you're a state government official who stole millions of dollars from poor people and used it in one instance to pay a speeding ticket. And she's going to big boy prison for this, but she pled guilty and plea bargained that she would plead guilty to federal charges so she could go to federal prison and avoid Mississippi State Prison.
Yeah.
How much of a scum do you have to be?
Mm-hmm.
Also, Ted DiBiase's son is also going to jail, or went to jail, because before he got the check from Nancy New for inspirational speeches or whatever, there was never any record of what he was going to do with the money or did with the money. He actually opened an LLC to take the money, so that he would have no tax liability for that income. And that was the paper trail that put him in jail. I can't with these people. The problem with all of this is they all see this as victimless crime.
Right. It never comes back to
them. Poor people are nothing.
That's right. Yep.
They're not people. They're not human. They're not deserving. And the best thing you can do is teach them not to be bad.
Right.
With anti-abortion, you know, pro-abstinence, two-person straight marriage, if we could only train them
right
to be good, then they wouldn't be poor.
It's a
theology and a philosophy that they need to burn in hell for.
It's a moral failing.
Poverty is a moral failing. So we can just steal this money that's intended to be given to poor people because they don't deserve it.
I do have something to add to this.
I'm almost done.
Okay.
The last part of this New Yorker paragraph. Moreover, because states don't have to spend all their TAMF funds each year, many carry over big sums in 2020. This is during the height of the pandemic. Tennessee, which has one of the highest child poverty rates in the nation, left $790 million in TAMF funds unspent. Now, what's the commonality here, Driftglass? What do you think is all these states, including Pennsylvania at the time, what do they have in common?
A very high level of spas and water slides?
No. Republican state legislatures.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, that was my second guess. It was going to be Republicans run the place.
Yeah.
What was happening at the other end of the government pipeline?
Mm-hmm.
Is equally important to mention, I think.
Oh, yeah.
This is 1996. The Republicans had been in power for Newt Gingrich had swept to power in the House. They'd taken control of the Senate. And basically, Newt Gingrich put a gun to Clinton's head and says, you're going to kick people off welfare.
Right.
I'm going to make you do it, or I'm going to tear the government down. And this was the shitty bill that Bill Clinton signed was the least onerous of all the bills. I think he turned down four or five of them before Gingrich just said, this is my last offer. So this was Republicans running the federal government, trying to beat the crap out of poor people to mm-hmm. save money, you know, for mm-hmm. the budget and all that stuff. And my ex helped write the white paper for Welfare to Work in Chicago. And in Chicago, where we had a Democratic mayor and a putatively Democratic legislature, and not under the thumb of Republicans. The rules were going to be, in addition to all the other things that were going to be provided, brand new funding, you're going to have to wrap assistance around people. It isn't just moralizing and shaking a finger at them.
Right.
You're going to have to provide people with training and childcare and transportation and food, mm-hmm. and companies willing to hire them for a living wage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you provide them with all of those services,
those support services that will move them into employment.
Yes. And right. most importantly, this was
especially women. Poor women need child care. They need mm-hmm. transportation. The number of women who are not working in Springfield because they don't have a vehicle.
Yep. Yep.
Period. A working vehicle.
And I remember going up to Wheeling, I think it was, and trying to set up an ESL program, an English as a Second Language program, for the kitchen help uh-huh. for the largest Asian restaurant in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of this program. But the program was, no, we're not going to put a work requirement and kick you out after 5 years. I mean, there's that, and that's terrible and should never have happened. But the object was, this was Clinton's boom economy. Mm-hmm. There was a labor shortage in the, right. in the 1990s. There was an actual labor shortage. So you can get Marriott hotels in Chicago and Hilton hotels in Chicago to come to the table and say, we will provide on-site training. We're going to have brown bag programs for training. We're going to get these people good jobs at our facilities, and we're going to treat them well.
They need people to make beds
right.
and cut vegetables and mm-hmm. do these things that don't require a lot of training, but do right. have OSHA requirements and other things. But yeah, and they need people to fill those jobs just like they do today. Right.
It was a whole system approach.
Mm-hmm.
That was still pretty rough, but it was a whole system approach that acknowledged the fact that it isn't moral failings that have trapped these people in poverty. It's geography, it's circumstances, it's lack of – there's always one or two things like transportation and childcare and right. an address. If you're homeless, you don't have a home address. You don't have a place people can call you or mail you. So mm-hmm. there's all these barriers that nobody in the Republican Party thought about mm-hmm. because they're just mm-hmm. poor people and screw them. And for a while –
and they need a Christian rock concert.
Right. That's the most important thing. That's mm-hmm. what really – that tips the balance. And so there is merit to the idea that having a – like a GI Bill for the poor
mm-hmm.
where they have access to all the amenities the middle class has, access to housing, cheap housing, affordable housing, good training, good paying jobs, it's good schools. Voila, they're the middle class all of a sudden.
Right.
But we don't want to spend
money
on that.
We don't want that. We don't want that because that hurts – I hate to say it, real estate developers.
Well,
that's who that hurts. It hurts housing values. And this is the thing that this book talks about, is the extent to which middle class and higher people contribute to the construction of a system that requires poor people to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And once we acknowledge that and create a mass movement of middle class people, this is something Chris Hayes always talks about, is that things won't change until the middle class decides they have to change. This has been true in you know, medieval Italy. It's true today.
Yeah.
The educated people who can write to their congressmen are the mm-hmm. ones who foment change.
People who can make trouble. Yep.
Yeah. And can make trouble. Have time to make trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's privilege. And if you know, my daughters make a lot of fun of me. They say, Mom, minivan check,
right.
sign in your front lawn that says, in this house, we believe, check.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She's a Karen. She's a Karen. Right. She's a liberal Karen, but she's a Karen. You know, write your letter to the editors, check. But we're the people that can take this, endpovertyusa.org, and turn it into a mass movement. And we must do it.
And if you want a more cynical view of why there's poverty in this country, do yourself a favor, go to YouTube and look up Tom Waits, the Fisher King. And there's a 3-minute video where he's homeless and he's in Grand Central Station, I think.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
he explains why he exists.
Yep.
It's to scare the shit out of the middle class, to go back to the job you hate and
you'll go back
up
to the
boss
job you hate. And this is why it's been so triggering for me this week.
Yep.
Is I remember and the author of this book, Desmond, Mr. Desmond, talks about his childhood and getting evicted from his home. I wasn't never evicted from my home, but boy, do I remember days when I didn't have lunch money. Do I remember days when the power got turned off?
Yep.
And the child me has made decisions. I've made decisions my whole life based on scarcity.
Uh-huh.
And seeking security so that I wouldn't be that child again.
Same.
And I think a lot of us are like that.
Yep.
And it's very triggering. I'm not going to cry now because I've learned not to cry on the podcast. I've learned tricks not to cry on the podcast. But the fact is that a lot of us have those scars.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you transcend that is activism. Make it so that the next generation doesn't have the childhood you did.
Right.
Tell me what you have a hat tip to Keith Olbermann this week. What's that about?
I have a big, this is a much happier story. See, let's have a nice uplifting. Oh, no, a big hat tip to Keith Olbermann, who's coming along on the podcast world. He's plugging along. He's doing okay.
You know, he needs another couple hundred, 700 episodes, and he'll be where we are in the professional range.
I'm beginning to think that he has 30 stories he promised not to tell, and he's just telling them over and over again.
He just keeps recycling them.
Yeah. And there's more out there. You know there's more out there that he's saving or reluctant to talk about. But he does talk with great vigor about MSNBC and what really happened there and what really happens there. And this week he apologized on behalf of MSNBC, his former employer, for what a shit show it has become. This week, Ari Melber was given the same garbage duty that Rachel Maddow, remember her?
Mm-hmm.
She was tasked with a few years ago. She was given the assignment of trying to sell MSNBC audiences on a conservative clown that absolutely no one wanted to hear from. It was, I believe, called the Greta is Great campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel Maddow was trying to sell people that Greta Van Susteren was awesome. And you should watch her. And she's going to get her own show now. And she and I just get along great. And we're great. We braid each other's hair. And she's a wonderful person. And please, please, please watch her show that someone at this company gave her for reasons we cannot figure out. And nobody watched it. And she was gone in a minute. Well, Ari Melber was just given the job of trying to sell his 23 viewers or whatever he has every night on the idea that hiring John Kasich as an MSNBC contributor is just a fucking brilliant idea. Because
he keeps having Trump lawyers on too, Ari Melber does, for some reason. Yeah.
This was the tipping point. This was the really, you're going to have John Kasich is the newest member of your lineup that already includes every Republican who's been run out of the Republican Party who doesn't already have a job at CNN.
Mm-hmm.
So, or hasn't been run out of the party. It's kind of straddling. I mean, you know, Michael Steele is still, he calls himself a Republican. He's still a Republican. And every time Chris Hayes gets the flu, they give Michael Steele that slot. So, you know, MSNBC is not our friend, Blue Gal.
No, and I'm bolting. You know, I'm just turning it off. If the former Republican's on, I change the channel. And I'm hoping that other people will do the same.
Yeah.
If and the only thing that's going to change that behavior is bad ratings.
Yes.
Because that's all the suits upstairs care about.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you, and the other thing that really has calcified in my mind this week is that MSNBC is not a news channel. It's an entertainment channel.
Oh, yeah.
And I've known that, you know, in my mind for a long time. But it really, like I said, calcified in my thought this week that we're watching this for entertainment. And if you have a former Republican on, it is not entertaining.
No.
So
it really isn't.
You're not doing your job.
And if you're like me, who is silly enough to actually follow these recently former Republicans down their various rat holes and listen to the Lincoln Project podcasts and the Bulwark podcast, you see the same story circulating from MSNBC to the Bulwark to the Lincoln Project and back again and back again and back again. Like, oh, this is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is not.
It's a coordinated messaging effort. It is.
Absolutely. Yeah. When the day after Michael Steele is on MSNBC for an hour, he pops up on the Bulwark.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is what we used to call it's a conversation among blue checks.
Yep.
You know, these are people who operate at the expensive, elite, funded, never going to miss a meal, never going to have a problem level of the media, all kind of getting together and getting along. And doing their thing. I do want to talk a moment about the New York Times. Speaking of elite media full of people who will never miss a meal. Now we're getting around to print media, which as we know is dead. And no one reads newspapers anymore. So why are we talking about the New York Times? Because it still controls the elite conversation. And it's just getting worse.
Well, and we would not have known about the treason against the Carter administration without the New York Times. And one of my least favorite reporters, Peter Baker, he was the one that broke that story. So I, you know, credit is due in that score.
Frosting on a turd. You know,
it is delicious. Frosting on a turd.
Like, could we have the frosting without the turd, please? No.
That'd be nice.
Nope. Got to have them both. Sorry. We have to have a multitude of opinions. Yeah, but do they have to be terrible opinions? Mm-hmm. So there's a gentleman named Mark Elliott on Twitter who talked about one story. Quote, sometimes the politics team at the New York Times seems absolutely delusional. This morning, it implied that Fox News was a legitimate news network until it, quote, lost its way in the weeks after the election. Really? He says, just in those few weeks. Huh. Yeah, this is a subject we have touched on. Well, let's see, we've done 704 episodes, so about 704 times. That the before time keeps getting closer and closer to yesterday. The entire recently former Republican, never Trump, Beltway media ecosystem depends on pretending that nothing of any interest or importance happened before 2016. It was just unknown gray tapioca pudding full of Reagan. And it was a great time and things were wonderful. And Clinton did some stuff. We don't know who did what or why. And then, boom, everything went horribly wrong. And the New York Times is now saying that, you know, Fox was a legitimate news organization until like 2020. And I know that's not true. And you know that's not true. And anybody with a functional cerebral cortex knows that's not true. So why is it being printed in the New York Times that it's true? I don't know, other than the fact the New York Times, like MSNBC, is not our friend. Then we move on to the story of Claremont McKenna College professor of government named John A. Shields. This is a story that actually made me laugh because he was given New York Times valuable real estate to write a long op-ed about how liberal professors need to step in to save the Republican Party. And I thought, the Onion has really gotten good at this. And Doug J. Balloon is getting really good at this.
I can't believe it's like a contest now.
Yeah.
How quickly you can tag Doug J. Balloon every time the New York Times. And this week there have been two or three times a day the New York Times has pulled this shit.
Yeah. And this is what happens when the blogs fail. This is a longer story than I want to tell. But the whole concept behind blogs, you're going to have a conversation between people. There's going to be a two-way level of communication. And what I've noticed, and, you know, Chris Hayes used to answer occasionally on a Saturday morning when he was doing his show. And Joanne Reed used to respond every now and then to something. I mean, the only time Chris Hayes ever responded to me was when I said Chris Hayes doesn't respond to his viewers. And he said, yes, I do. And that was it. So, okay, well, fine, Chris. That was 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Who knows? But there used to be some level of interaction. I mean, Marcos Melitzis used to drive traffic from Daily Kos over to MSNBC. And there was a conversation. There is no conversation anymore at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all old media. It's all radio media, like from the 30s. It's all omnidirectional or monodirectional. It's the New York Times speaks, Bret Stephens speaks, and everyone listens. And when you try to say, but, nobody listens. Nobody cares. When people at MSNBC or CNN, anywhere on cable news, do terribly dumb, stupid, offensive things, put awful people on the air, and you raise your hand and just say, why? No one at MSNBC will answer the most basic question about what the fuck thinking was behind this thing here. They'll answer it after they retire, and if their NDA runs out, and after they become Keith Olbermann in retirement, they'll talk about it. But nobody will explain to you, like, why the fuck David Brooks still has a job. I think I know why. And it's a very unpleasant answer, but nobody will even acknowledge that's a question. So this Claremont McKenna College professor is worried that young Republicans are falling prey to MAGA lunatics like Charlie Kirk instead of listening to, like, Claremont McKenna College professors named John A. Shields, who teaches them about the long and proud tradition of conservatives owning the libs before it became so dirty. You know, back when owning libs was more civilized and genteel, that's what he wants colleges to teach. And the op-ed is literally entitled, Liberal Professors Can Rescue the GOP.
And that's their job.
That's their job now. Because remember, when Republicans fuck things up, it's the job of liberals to clean it up as Republicans tell them how they should do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the whole thing that pissed me off about the Never Trumpers, is they immediately became highlighted members of the elite media, and their first things out of their mouth were, Democrats suck at everything, liberals are stupid, here's how you should run your party from now on. And they're always wrong about everything. So, but this article is just one long, sad complaint by one man that he does not like the fleas he picked up when he lay down with conservative dogs decades ago. And then you flip the page over, or a couple of pages go by, and there's Bret Stephens writing about how, you know, 20 years later, he doesn't regret his position on Iraq one bit. Well, maybe one bit, one little bit, but it was still a perfectly justifiable war, but George Bush just screwed up very badly. And his non-apology was so similar to Tom Nichols' non-apology in The Atlantic that I wrote a short post mixing the quotes up between them to see if anybody could tell them apart. And you know what? Nobody could.
That's like one of those word games you like to play.
It is. Guess who said this? Really, they were stamped out of the same template. And that's The Atlantic. And that's The New York Times day after day after day after day. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so frustrating to be on the outside going, really, we're going to do this shit again? Didn't you learn from the Iraq War? No, didn't learn a goddamn thing. This is who we are.
They learned you get away with it and make more money and have
more
legitimacy at, you know, Chardonnay swilling cocktail parties among your friends. That's what mm-hmm. you get. There's an amazing fluff piece by Michael Bender in the New York Times this week.
In the New York Times? Are you kidding me? No, go ahead.
And this was the one where I realized it is Daily Sport. To see who can tag Doug J. Balloon first.
Yeah.
Quote, Donald J. Trump, the former primetime reality TV star known for his love of big stages and vast crowds, has embraced a more humbling and traditional style on the campaign trail in recent months.
Oh, God.
That's this week.
Yeah. And it goes on like that for a couple of paragraphs. It's bad. It's so bad. And it's just, you know.
And this era that we're living in. Brings me to a related question. Why is Donald Trump not just disqualified for running for president after he led an insurrection? And it's the same reason that Bibi Netanyahu is back in office mm-hmm. and trying to fire judges in Israel who prosecuted him for corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Media failure to be a moral force because investors, this is now an investment, not of rich people, not a news organization. That's
so
it.
So what you're saying, Blue Gal, is democracy died in darkness. Is that it? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Yeah.
Who owns that paper?
Yeah. Don't get me started.
Yeah. So I guess my last point, Driftglass, before we do a news roundup is, you know, there are alternatives. If you want informative entertainment on liberal politics.
Yeah.
Hal Sparks is a good person to go to.
He's great.
I understand we might be on that show sooner rather than later.
It is my understanding, based on cryptic symbols that we share across the internet, known only to us and a few outsiders, that there's a reasonably good chance that we might appear on the Hal Sparks Mega Worldwide show in the next 24 hours or so.
Oh, my God.
Just saying. I don't know for sure. You know, plans change.
No, because things can change last minute, and that's fine.
And Hal Sparks has an adorable, almost punchline level of at a hotel, brought the wrong cable, doesn't work. So, you know,
nothing's working. I'm going to have to wing it. Yes. And that's fine.
Which is great.
Thank God for him.
But that's because he's a one man band. He's doing the whole thing all himself.
He's doing the whole show himself
all day long. Yeah.
Technically, yes. He's had to teach himself all this stuff. And we're an alternative. There are liberal podcasts that are not cross posting and cross engaging and being guests on the Ben Shapiro show. That's all I'll say.
Jesus. Yeah. Man, yeah.
We're not on the Ben Shapiro show ever.
No, really? Because I thought, oh, okay. My mistake.
And if you get invited on the Ben Shapiro show, Driftglass, you have a choice to make.
Yeah. Whether to cancel Charlie Kirk on the same day, because
scheduling. Whether to stay married to Blue Gal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a hard decision.
Not a hard decision. Hey, no. Let's do a news roundup.
All right. After you, Blue Gal.
The Bidening continues from the aforementioned WAPO. Mm-hmm. Many Trump staffers have become burned out by, quote, the tendency for their work to result in attorney's fees and appointments with federal prosecutors.
That's a really well-written line. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very passive and very lovely. Amazon has announced plans to lay off nearly 27,000 people, plus canceling their planned construction in Arlington, Virginia. This was long after the Virginia General Assembly gave them $1.1 billion for economic development after only 8 minutes of debate.
Remember the contest?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That cities, you know, spent huge amounts of money to try to get Amazon to move to their town.
Yeah.
And New York City kicked them out.
Yeah.
Because they knew it was a drain on resources.
Mm-hmm. But lots of.
And now, oh, sorry, change of plans. We're going in a different direction.
Who will hike their skirt up the highest to mm-hmm. get us, you know, and it's just wham, bam, thanks for the cash when we're out of here. So, okay, yeah. Great.
From Daily Kos, Mike Pence scolds Trump in the penciest way possible by saying the authorities should back off. Also, history will judge him, Driftglass.
He will. History will judge everyone, Blue Gal. At least, you know, that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping I will live long enough to see history actually do this. But then mm-hmm. again, as I joked with you earlier today, all I need to do is wait a year or two or five for the Bulwark to start their own It Is Not Fair to Remember Things podcast.
As you said, it'll all start with mm-hmm. 2016.
It is eerie the number of times I have heard my own words or the liberal blogosphere's own words repeated by people who hate us.
Oh, they read your blog, Driftglass.
Hate us.
There's no doubt about it. There is no fucking doubt about it.
And I'm sure they read Digby, and I'm sure they read Atreus, and I'm sure they read you, and I'm sure they read Crooks and Liars. But the amount of just straight up liberal critique of the Republican Party, they have stolen, shaved off the serial numbers, pretended we don't exist, and said, I don't know if you know this, Blue Gal. I don't know if you know this, Charlie, but Fox News is actually a propaganda network. Like, really? Oh, my God. When did that happen?
You know, Driftglass, no fair remembering things. Five or six years ago.
Yeah. That's right. My blood pressure is under control, Blue Gal. So let's
take
a deep calming breath. A federal appeals court ordered Trump's attorney to testify before the grand jury investigating classified documents found at Mar-a-Lago and to turn over documents to federal prosecutors. Last week, prosecutors in special counsel Jack Smith's office presented, quote, sufficient evidence, unquote, that Trump intentionally concealed the existence of additional classified documents from his attorney, Evan Corcoran. And the way that Corcoran and that other attorney played hot potato with who's going to sign off on this shit is going to land both of them, hopefully, in front of a judge, is going to sentence them to some time in big boy jail.
Yep. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point, the ninth increase since March 2022. The Federal Open Market Committee voted unanimously to increase the federal funds rate to a range of 4.75 to 5%. The highest since September 2007, despite the risk of exacerbating stress in the banking sector. Now, a colleague of mine who knows about such things said, you know, quarter of 1% is pretty much the lowest that you can raise it. Mm-hmm. If they chose not to raise it, this is all tarot cards. It's all about the signal you send to the markets.
That's right.
Which is BS, but that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And this colleague said, look, if they said zero, that indicates that they think more banks are going to fail, which leads to more banks failing.
Right, right.
So they had to do something, so they did the minimum that they could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we just put a teacup on this bookshelf and it doesn't collapse, that proves that the bookshelf is soundly constructed and perfectly safe. Okay, I'm willing to buy that.
Elizabeth Warren to pick the Fed chief every time.
I want her and Bernie Sanders to go into a room like picking a pope.
Mm-hmm. And when the white smoke comes out.
I'm like, oh, we have a new Fed chief. Oh, my God. Oh, it's the last living communist in America. That's great. Drug shortages in the U.S. are increasing in frequency and duration, which represent a quote, unacceptable national security risk, unquote, according to a report by the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. Between 2021 and 2022, drug shortages increased by nearly 30% due in part to an over-reliance on, wait for it, foreign countries like China and India, because we don't make that stuff here anymore.
Put Medicare and Medicaid under the aegis of the Defense Department.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh.
And then the Army can manufacture drugs whenever there's a shortage, and the president can order it.
Yep. And manufacture enough of them to make them really inexpensive.
Yeah.
You know, remember when
if somebody gets profit hungry, we go, oh, sorry.
Sorry. Oops.
We're manufacturing insulin now. Too bad.
We have a public option of insulin now. So mm-hmm. you have to deal with that.
Yep. My tax dollars should go to that.
Happy to pay for it. More than happy to pay for it.
The United States Senate advanced a bill to repeal the congressional authorization used to attack Iraq in 1991 and 2003. Wow.
Yep. Getting around to it.
Yeah. Nearly 20 years to the day that the U.S. began its shock and awe campaign to topple Saddam Hussein's regime. Hey, Driftglass.
Yeah.
Fox rocks.
Fox rock. Yeah. Now, show of hands. Everyone out there, raise your hand if you know what we're talking about when we say Fox rock. Yeah. It was
They took a camera out to the
desert. To the desert.
To the desert. To active, on the ground, military troops, U.S. military troops, and got them to say Fox rocks to the camera.
Just before the invasion, these were
on-duty military.
These were the ground troops that were about to invade Iraq after the bombing and missile attacks. And Fox News went out there and had them say Fox rocks into the camera over and over again. Mm-hmm. Because that's what
And they've Fox scrubbed did. Those videos from... Because so many of those people who said Fox rocks are dead now.
Right. Or have come back and said, that's the last time I volunteer for anything.
Right.
Because, you know, I had a friend named Clint who was a literature guy, but also went off to serve in Afghanistan, volunteered, mm-hmm. fresh out of college. And he came back from Afghanistan with war stories. And he and I used to go to a local bar.
It's the Republican National Committee, Driftglass. This is the best episode
ever.
Oh,
my God.
No kidding. That was a phone call, Spam RNC.
Yeah. That should be their whole
That's
name.
That's staying in there, Driftglass.
Okay. I swear, hey, Miguel.
They're still calling us.
This is the best podcast ever. Okay. I want to hear the voicemail after we're done. Anyway, a friend of mine, he had literary interests. He was a good writer and he was a veteran. And so he would talk to his military buddies about war stuff. And he talked to people like me about literary stuff. And he came back from Afghanistan and went right to work for the Kerry campaign.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because he's like, these fuckers lied to us. We went over there to stop the terrorism. And it turned out they weren't interested in that at all. And they were interested in a couple of things. And none of them had anything to do with Saddam Hussein or the Saudis who attacked us. And he went straight to work for John Kerry. And I lost track of him over the years. But that was not an uncommon reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It was like, shit, they lied to us. They lied to us. They lied us into this thing. We did a whole podcast about this. With a family from Iowa who father and son went into the military. But
that was this Tuesday. So go back and listen to that episode that dropped this past Tuesday.
The Minnesota House of Representatives advanced legislation that would shield patients who travel to the state for an abortion and the providers that treat them. If passed by the Senate and signed into law, the Reproductive Freedom Defense Act would prevent state courts or officials from complying with extraditions, arrests, or subpoenas related to reproductive health care that a person receives in Minnesota. The bill now goes to the state Senate, where Democrats have a tiny majority. Minnesota last week also became just the fourth U.S. state to guarantee universal free school meals. Please watch the adorable video of Governor Waltz getting hugs from happy school children after he signed the legislation. It will warm your heart.
Fox News producer Abby Grossberg filed a lawsuit claiming the network's lawyers coerced her into providing misleading testimony in Dominion Voting System's $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit against the network. Apparently, she was a Tucker Carlson producer for a while and a Maria Bartiromo producer, mm-hmm. and she found out that they used the C word over at Tucker Carlson Show all the time.
And C doesn't stand for centrism either. Nope.
No, it doesn't.
Nope. There was anti-Semitism and racism and misogyny and just a whole shit show of exactly what you would expect from Fox News.
Exactly.
Now, we have in breaking Florida news a couple of stories. House Republicans gathered at a luxury resort near Disney World where House Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan of Ohio and senior GOP leaders are preparing to demand testimony from members of the Manhattan DA's office amid reports of an imminent Trump indictment.
That sounds like a conspiracy to commit obstruction of justice, Driftglass.
It sure does. And they have no more standing to do this than I do. So, you know, fuck them.
The Nonpartisan League of Women Voters was told it cannot hold a rally in Florida on the steps of the old Capitol in Tallahassee under a new DeSantis administration rule requiring groups to first get sponsorship from a sympathetic state agency, because fascism equals Florida.
Speaking of which, I titled this one, The Hate Song of Ron DeSantis Pudding Fingers. In Florida, the Wingnuts come and go, banning Michelangelo. And you get free points if you know where that's from. This confirms yet again the entire state of Florida is now one big screaming Parks and Rec town hall meeting. A principal of a Florida charter school purportedly devoted to, quote, content-rich classical education in the liberal arts and sciences, unquote, was fired for teaching students about, wait for it, Renaissance sculpture. Three parents complained that the lesson's content, which included learning about Michelangelo's sculpture David, upset their children. Quote, they wish they'd been notified of the lesson beforehand. The other parent complained the lesson was, quote, pornographic, unquote.
Meanwhile, Disney World is hosting a gay conference. So take that. The Miami Herald reports the Out and Equal Workplace Conference will be held at the Walt Disney World Resort, September 11th through 14th. Dozens of iconic American companies, including Apple, McDonald's, Uber, Walmart, Hilton, Amazon, Boeing, Cracker Barrel, and John Deere are sponsoring the Out and Equal Workplace Summit, which over 5,000 people are expected to attend. Several government agencies, including the State Department and the CIA, are listed as government partners and will have booths at the conference. And a little editorial note, do you know how many government offices would shut down if the gays went on strike?
Oh, all of them?
Just in Congress.
Yeah, yeah.
Have a great week, everybody. We love you.
Yeah.
Keep the faith.
This has been This has been a wild podcast. We've had ups, we've had downs, we've cried, we've laughed, we have cats throwing up on the bed. It's been weird.
Almost. You saved him.
I did. I moved quickly. I moved with alacrity, and I got that cat off the bed. Tell us about what we do each week on this podcast, Blue
Each
Gal.
Week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is a dog of adventure, Benji. One-eyed rescue boy of unknown pedigree. Like the movie of the same name, Benji's life is clearly full of action and suspense. That's an old story in my family. My little sister, Helen, when she was 4 years old, sitting in the back seat of the car. No car seats, no seat belts. This was, late 60s. Daddy, can we go see Benji? It's full of action and suspense. And of course, Benji Eats Freshly Poured Pet Food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve Pet Store Perfection or Dollar Store Dreck, your pets will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Benji, the one-eyed rescue boy of unknown pedigree, at our Facebook page and website. And you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us. We do not discriminate. Send it to our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, subject line internet kitty, where you can also write to both of us, by the way. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write to us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions. Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Hashtag fire to joy. I can't believe we still have to say that. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our full-time job, and we need your support to keep going. Many of you support this podcast with a contribution, and we so appreciate it. If you don't yet, see our website, proleftpod.com, for details. Every way that you can support our show is there. And by the way, a lot of people on Patreon now are supporting us once a year. And you can do that. You can set it up to give $1 a week or $2 a week or however much you want to give a week and just give it one time. And then you'll be billed again 12 months from now. And a lot of people seem to think that that's the easiest way to budget things. So if that's the way you want to do it, do it. That's great. Please share our show on social media. And if you love this podcast, get someone else to listen to, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, look out, the Internet Kitties stand in solidarity with LA teachers on strike. Go teachers unions.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2023, DGBG Productions.